This is Screen Divers. In this week's episode, we are covering The Good, The Bad, and The Weird. Released in 2008, this is one of the most expensive blockbuster movies to come out of South Korea. It's directed by Kim Ji-woon, written by Kim Ji-woon, produced by Kim Ji-woon, and it stars a golden cast of very, very popular South Korean actors. Song Kang-ho, Lee Byung-hun, Yoon Ho-sang. Yoon Ho-sang, Yoon Ji-moon,
In this episode, we're about to butcher a lot of names. Let's go.
It's difficult, man. This is very difficult.
I just called him all Dave.
No, I don't want to be rude. So
no, it's fine. No,
Ryu Sung. And it stars a golden cast of very popular South Korean actors. Song Kang-ho, Lee Byung-hun, Yoon Ho-sang, Yoon Ji-moon, Ryu Sang-so, Ma Dong-so.
I was about to applaud you then. Come on, keep going.
Maybe I'll just fit in later.
Which name were you falling over on?
Sung Bung Ho.
Please, just give me a second. I'll start again. And it stars an excellent cast.
Can you do it in an Italian accent?
my
Oh, fuck.
Deep breath.
And it stars an excellent cast of South Korean actors. Song Kang-ho, Lee Byung-hun, Yoon Ho-sang, Yoon Ji-moon, Ryu Sang-so, and a list that goes on that is very hard to pronounce, and I will not continue to do so because I know that we already butchered the names of these very, very clever actors.
I'm going to give you an applause for that, though.
Please. Hey, I want a full round of applause, assholes.
Oh, sorry, everybody, right now.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, thank you very much. This was distributed by CJ Entertainment and produced by Baronson Co. Ltd. and Grim Pictures. It has a running time of 139 minutes, and the languages featured in this movie are Korean, Mandarin, and Japanese. It was made for a budget of $10 million, which is mind-blowing by any standards, and it made $44.5 million US. How are you, Steve?
I'm really good. Oven very late getting to this podcast.
How are you, Ricky?
I am doing well. I am here.
Excellent. How are you, George?
Yeah, I am. Thanks for having me on. Long-time listener, first-time caller. So
yes. Great to have you on, man.
I apologize. After last week, the guest you had on then had a voice like sort of hot butter on a warm crumpet, and I sound like a cockney parrot taking a shit. So I apologise to you. I apologise to your listeners that was expecting some sort of voiceover artist, but yeah.
No, mate, no. I'll make sure to let Kev know that how did you describe his voice?
Is it a hot butter on a warm crumpet?
Yeah, he's going to love that, man.
Yeah.
Kev's going to love that. Last week we had Kevin Molar, the Wolverine, from the EBD podcast. If you missed the episode, please go and have a listen. We covered around this. But back to this, there'll be a very important question to ask. Ricky, what's this movie about?
This is a almost classic spaghetti western, but with a Eastern Asian flavor. This has a map. It has one good guy, it has two gangs, it has one weird guy, and the whole Japanese army all doing a sort of it's a mad, 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 mad world rush to a treasure.
Mm, that's true. That's a good analogy right there. I forgot about that movie, man.
I don't think I said enough mads. It might be it's a mad, 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 mad world. Or rat race. Let's just call it rat race.
Okay, fine. But this was my pick. And the reason why I picked this movie, I have a very fond memory of watching this movie for the first time. A friend of ours, that passed away recently, Jan. Anyone listening to this podcast that knew Jan knew exactly which Jan I'm talking about. He was larger than life. He would walk into a room and light it up. He was a close friend of ours. He introduced me to this movie. I think it was around 2009. And that conversation took place at a party. And someone listening to that, maybe that's why it became a part of the conversation. It was a girl that has a South Korean heritage. Her name is Mia Soderbergh. In fact, she reached out to me on Facebook because while we were watching the movie, I reached out to her, actually. I sent her a message going, hey, we're thinking of you now. It's like, we're watching The Good, the Bad, and the Weird. You remember? She goes, of course I remember. And the proposition was for me to watch this movie, and Jan very animatedly suggesting, why don't we, and Mia was right there, why don't we cook Korean food and you screen the movie at yours? It ended up in being like 20 of us, and we screened the movie at mine. It was a blast, absolute blast. I gotta say, I ever had a different memory of this movie a little bit, maybe because of everything around it. And that was my experience with this. Steve?
So, if we're going straight to me, I've never watched this movie. I mean, it's quite surprising. I saw a lot of the advertising for this movie when it was released in 2008. I'm a big fan of Korean cinema. I love films mm-hmm. like The Host and a lot of the supernatural kind of stuff, as well as some of the science fiction movies, even mm-hmm. going as far as saying the director's other movies, especially Wolf Brigade and stuff like that, which have been produced. But I've never got around to watching this movie. So it was a fresh take. And I was really happy with it. Again, I was a virgin. Once again, I was a virgin on Umba's couch.
Steak beforehand. All right. So you were wined and dined.
Yeah,
he
tried to seduce me.
He's jealous. Don't be jealous, Ricky. Don't be jealous, Ricky.
I'm not, mate. Don't worry. Right. I'm all good. Okay.
George, what was your first experience with this movie?
Actually, we rented this from Blockbuster Video. If anyone remembers Blockbuster Video, it was kind of like a shop where you'd buy a DVD but have to take it back. And for those that don't know what DVDs are, they're kind of like little tea coasters with a film on them. Do you remember them?
Yeah. Are you assuming that we've got fucking Gen Z listening to the show? That's not the case. It's middle age all the way, mate.
Yeah, so anyway, we rented it out as a beer and pizza film. And I seem to remember a lot of the people watching it went and started playing Command and Conquer. So it was, I think it's slightly too long to be a beer and pizza film. But I mean, I enjoyed it. I didn't actually realize it was the same director until a lot later on. Obviously, the director of Bittersweet Life and the other great film, I Saw the Devil.
He was also the director of a movie starring a very dear friend of this show, which was The Last Stand.
Yeah,
that was his American debut, apparently. And also, one of his recent movies was something that I didn't know about until I was screen dived today, which is Cobweb. And it stars Song Kang-ho, which I adore. Like, one of my all-time favorite movies in general. Not just Korean movies. One of my all-time favorite movies cross-genre. So not even like, no, it's Memories of a Murder. Mm-hmm. Memories of a Murder is a phenomenal movie. There's another George, which is someone that we talk about quite often in this podcast, and that is George from Horror Weekly. It is one of his favorite movies. And I forgot how good that movie was until he mentioned on the podcast and I went to rewatch it. Just the last few frames of that movie will stay with you for a very, very long time.
Yeah, I mean, Korea in the early noughties, I mean, they had that shit on lock. I mean, the thrillers that were coming out of there were just banger after banger. I mean, you had the Vengeance trilogy, The Chaser. Yeah. So many great films come out of Korea at that time, and it was, yeah, very a goldmine, pretty much.
When it comes down to Song Kang-ho, which plays the weird in this, he is, you know, there's something about him, but he was my favorite part of this movie, by the way. And I think the casting was very well done as well, because the guy that plays the good, I'm not going to say he didn't do much. He did, but he's more of a romance kind of, you know, rom-com kind of actor. And that's who you place in the role of a good, right? But if you look, the one that stands, this movie seems to me that it was built around the weird. And he is the central character of this movie as well, in my opinion. But we're here to talk about this.
Yeah. I think the good looks like he looks like K-pop, doesn't he? Looks like a K-pop star rather than a cowboy.
And that's why I think the target demographic of the things that he stars in is probably targeting teenagers and, you know, it makes perfect sense. But in regards to the bad, which is Lee Byung-hun, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, I forgot that he was in Squid Game as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in season two mainly.
He has
one appearance in season one, but in season two he's more of a mainstay. And season three, which will be coming out this year, he's also a mainstay in that as well.
Mm. And he was in I Saw the Devil,
yeah.
Which and, again, I you know, as we were watching the movie, I didn't, you know, what were you saying, Steve?
And Bittersweet Life.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
Also, he was in a remake that I completely dismissed just because I am so fond of the source material, but I put my preconceptions aside and I decided to watch it. I think I called in sick. And the movie in question is The Magnificent Seven, directed by Antoine Fuqua. And it's a remake, obviously. But even The Magnificent, there would be none of this without movies like Yojimbo or without Seven Samurai. So it is a story that has been retold over and over again. However, it's, you know, we're talking about material that you touch carefully. And I think Fuqua did a decent job. And he plays one of the seven in that. I completely, like when I clicked, because I just watched this like less than 6 months ago, completely forgot about it. When it comes down to the host, you would, like, again, going back to Song Kang-ho, I mean, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, George, you just mentioned that trilogy. He was in that. This movie, yes, 10 million. First of all, when you know, like I did say this when we opened, you try and make them. Have you seen how many extras are in this? There's a ton of extras. And even the majority of the movie is practical effects. There is some CGI, particularly some explosions or whatever, and there's the opening with the eagle, which, by the way, by modern standards, that CGI really holds. Really holds. That entire opening with the eagle. Yeah, you can see that it is, but it's just a nice sequence. Like, I adore this movie. At the same time, the very nature of the furious kind of pacing that runs all the way through this movie. The movie opens and it bang, that's it. We're on it. Like, it just, it's like that train at the beginning of this movie. The movie opens with a locomotive, you know, and that's basically, it's an unstoppable force. And it's not a short movie either, dude. The original cut of this movie was even longer than the running time that we mentioned. And the version that myself and Steve watched is actually the unedited version. It's not the version that was released in the US. I read that today, and when I realized what they cut out of this, I thought, what the fuck? Why would you do that? The movie needs to hit that way. You know? And now I'm curious to know, Ricky, how did your version end, the one that you watched?
So, let me just tell you about my relationship with this movie first. I'm a huge, 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 huge fan of Kim Jin-woo. And the reason I'm a huge fan of him is because I got turned on to The Quiet Family at a very early age. The Quiet Family is probably one of the most decent, slow thrillers ever to have been made. And I will watch that movie all the time.
I'm going to stop you for a second because I need to give you credit. And the guys probably don't know this, and for listeners as well. I knew very little, next to nothing, of Korean cinema before I met you.
You're the Oh, was it me? Yeah, I'm so sorry that I turned you on.
I remember our first conversation about it. You used to come around for coffee, and when you were telling me, like, these guys do vengeance like nothing else, man. You got to watch this. Like, holy shit. Then looked into it and worked out that at a cultural level, there's a reason why they do vengeance. Because of the invasion of the Japanese, there's, you know, it's in there. And it's that subtext. It's in everything that comes out.
Yeah,
of South Korea when it comes down to movies.
And so because of The Quiet Place, I watched A Tale of Two Sisters pretty much when it got released. Like it was part of Cineworld used to have a Asian cinema festival where I saw a lot of Mik Takeshi, but a lot of Korean cinema was coming through that as well. So I saw A Tale of Two Sisters at the cinemas. And of course, you know, after watch, I rate A Tale of Two Sisters so much that I have sat down Sally and forced her to watch some of this depraved cinema. but when The Good, the Bad, and the Weird came out, of course, I went to see it. And it was a very mixed reaction for me at that time because the host had been on 3 years earlier. There was also later after we've talked about I Saw the Devil. And then there was also all of Park Chan-wook's films with Choi Min-sik, who, you know, you can't turn down any of the Vengeance trilogy because they changed cinema as well to a point that so many of those films, they tried to make American remakes. And you know what? They gave Oscars finally to, like, Parasite. This film is really interesting when you think about what they cut out from the international version, because a lot of the stuff that they cut out was directly to do with Korea's history. One of the things that I remember is that I must have seen the uncut version a while back, like maybe it was on TV or maybe somebody had it and I watched it again with them. But when I rewatched this one, I had a Blu-ray that was still wrapped up in cellophane because I'd seen the film so many times, so I haven't opened it until 2 days ago. Opened it up, put it in, and I was like, there's some differences in this one from what I remember. Then I read it up. They removed a lot of the references to the early Korean settlement by the Japanese. So one of the things that he talks about early on, The Good, is that he joins the resistance movement and they're talking about why the resistance movement is there and why it's important for them to get the treasure before the Japanese get it, before the Chinese get it, before the Russian get it, to help in the independence of Korea. And a lot of that is removed for the international audiences because I guess they were like, nobody's going to know about Korean history. Yeah, nobody cares. So why put this whole thing about Korean independence? Another line that is important that got cut out of the version I watched was there's a point where the weird and the good are having a chat about like everything.
The version that you're talking about, was this in your latest viewing?
This was the British version. So this is the UK cut that I've got.
In that cut as well, there's something else. Apparently the UK Film Commission requested for like about 5 minutes of footage or some shit. No, 5 minutes. That's too much. But they had to take out, and I'm going to take somebody's factoid here for sure, because I can see George has shifted his weight. All right, guys, we can see, all right, for our listeners, George has moved like, oh, you motherfucker. That's like, he's got notes, right? So I'm going to take this one away from you, George. The UK Film Commission asked for all the imagery of horses being hurt to be removed because there was a lot of horse falls.
Yeah.
George, did I take this from you?
4 seconds of cuts.
There you go, 4 seconds.
So obviously, there was 4 seconds where it was a bit, oh, that's a bit too much.
Yeah.
I mean, the horse fell over, but we don't have to see it, you know?
It's true.
Ricky, I was going to say the important line that gets removed, again, related to Korean history, which made people go, what's that all about, supposedly, is he says, every Korean has a reason to be sad. every Korean story, there is sadness in it. And of course, if you're not going to put anything about the independence army or the revolutions or all of that about against the Japanese army, then who's going to know why Korea is sad?
No, I understand. I understand. Particularly when you listen to K-pop. Why would Korea be sad? But it's, look, the thing that I, you know, I was expecting you to go somewhere else with this. The realization that you had when you watched this movie, or why your reaction was kind of a mixed bag. And I had that this time watching it. Because I remember I was more impressed by the, first of all, one thing that I remember from this movie, maybe it's because of the state of mind I was in or whatever, because it's not long ago. I mean, it is long ago because we're old. But it's 2008, that's 17 years ago. Oh, fuck, I did it to myself.
Yeah, you did the math.
It's a long time ago. Anyway, well, point of the matter is I remember this movie being very big in scope. And yes, some of the set pieces are big. But then again, there's a lot of like shooting gallery kind of bits in this. There's a lot of the action takes place in close quarters. And if you think about it, a lot of the weaponry in this period is range weapons. So it's kind of a contrast. And then the other thing as well, that I remember, I didn't think about it, but it must have mirrored what I thought about when I watched it the first time. All of the movies that I was, you know, that you introduced me to, Ricky, back then, were innovative. There was a vein of innovation running through them. Like it's first of all, you're fascinated by something that is somehow a little alien, because the culture that resides within it is far away from us, right? So I was attracted to that. And one of the things that this movie lacks, and, you know, it's not a put down, but it's an ego, it doesn't innovate. There's no innovation whatsoever in this movie. It's a remake, and it's not a straight-up remake. Like, if you look at Wiki, if you look at IMDb, or if you read anything about this movie, it's like, yeah, it pays homage to 1966, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Now, you guys, we've been friends long enough here. And even George, we were talking before the show, and he was telling me he revisited The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly as a sign of respect towards Leona, and that's great. This movie is not a direct remake to that. This movie is an homage to an era
from it. Yeah,
because there's a little bit of Fistful in it. There's a little bit of For a Few Dollars More. There's a little bit of that. There's a little bit of this, and when you toss everything into a blender, unless you're making a protein shake, you're getting something that makes people cringe a little bit. This movie doesn't do that, okay? But I imagine that if you take all of the subtext and the exposition required to know that there is actually some historical foundation to this movie and its characters and the story that takes place, you take that out, it's mediocre. And that's, yeah. I'm glad that, I really hope that anyone listening to this, if they haven't seen this movie, they're not relegated to the US version or whatever international cut was released, because you need to, most of the time, if you look for it now, you'll be able to find the entirety. And another thing, please do not watch this dubbed. Do not dare to watch this dubbed, because it's a bad habit, man. Like, people need to understand that there's a certain emphasis that is placed, even if the language is alien to you. I mean, I don't speak Korean, right? But actors put on a performance, and it's in the intonation of something, in the diction, the timbre, the pitch of a sentence, of a line delivered by the actors. These are actors, they're acting, so you need to hear their voice. And obviously there is a disconnect. Some countries have a long, long history with dubbing, and they're really good at it. I can tell you that Spain, for example, Italy, Germany, now has very good like dub actors, people that do voiceovers professionally, and they would spend their entire career voicing one person. Like in Italy, we have a dude that does De Niro, and he will do De Niro throughout the duration until he dies, you know? And so that kind of, because all movies are dubbed, there's a long, if you ever ripped something from the internet, we'll go back to the time, which we never did. Nobody here ever downloaded anything legally.
No, we never did that illegally.
Absolutely. Why would we?
That's crazy.
Yeah. I've got my hands up, by the way, for anyone.
Don't come for me!
Anyway, oh, God.
So if you are after watch some, just watch it. Just watch it with subtitles. All right. The new generation actually is adjusting themselves to subtitles because of the audio mixes, right? The audio mixes usually don't suit most setups, so they can't hear dialogue. So there's an entire generation now that will not watch anything without subtitles. You know this, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Gen Z, millennials, they need subtitles to watch something.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It's the Gen X that is working now and can afford fucking Dolby Atmos that doesn't need subtitles. Anyway. Yeah, that's it.
And you have to watch it very quietly at night.
Mm. Oh, well, there's that as well.
Yeah. Can I just say, going back to the name choice, I find it cheapens the product by calling an unnecessary comparison to The Good, the Bad, the Ugly.
Mm.
Like it could have been the same film with a completely different name, and I think it would have worked in its favor more.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah.
There's also a bit of a disconnect with the name because the version I saw, there was three names. There was The Good, the Bad, the Weird. There mm-hmm. was Oriental Western. Right. And then right at the end,
it just said
Western.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But looking into it, all the Korean posters, when you translate the Korean, it does say good guy, bad guy, weird guy. That's the official name of it. Good guy, bad guy, weird guy.
Watching this with Steve, because, you know, Steve came over, we cooked, we watched the movie. It's enjoyable. So I love this stuff, but I have to say this. It was also an instance in which I wish I had a gun myself so I could take myself out. Because as we're watching the movie, your friend, Ricky, George, your new acquaintance, made me want to put a gun in my mouth. So, yeah, he did. There's no guns, but I was seriously thinking about getting something to take myself out. Because he saw one fucking gun and then fixated all the way through the movie and took me out. Yeah, because he pointed out something that, you know, Steve knows about guns a little bit. Because his father used to collect and sell memorabilia. He's going to tell you in a second. But regardless of fucking that, he spent way too much time on it. And it's like, you see, okay, it was an anachronistic kind of, but then I fixated on it as well. Because there is an anachronistic quality about this movie. Because then we started asking ourselves, when the fuck does this take place? And we were trying to take it. Today, when I did the research this morning, at the last moment as usual, I found out that this takes place in 1939, right? But it's not cohesive. It's not cohesive at all. Like, you think it's like turn of century. And then again, there's all the emphasis placed behind an oil well, which would have been possibly a little bit earlier because that part of the world switched to coal by now. It's fucking... So, yes. Now, Steve, am I talking bullshit here or did you have a problem with the guns in this a little bit?
I felt like some of the guns were being used were not 1930s guns or set in within that time frame. Lugers, Stimulus 45, a few other bits and pieces. I did start going, oh my god, what time frame are we supposed to be in? You know, but yeah.
I find, sorry, Sally had the exact same issue. It
She's
wasn't
into
over
guns?
The guns.
Is that what you're telling me?
No, it wasn't the guns. It was just she turned around to me and was sort of like, now, okay, I know it's meant to be just a fun film. It's just meant to be a bunch of action and you're meant to like it. But there's so many strings that don't make sense. And she went on about, she went on about the oil. And she was like, surely if that's the treasure, that would have only been discovered like 20 years prior. Maybe 30 years prior. So how is it such a big thing? And then there were tanks, you know, there were barrels. So it's really obvious that it's an oil play. And she just kept going on and on. And I was just sort of like, yeah, they didn't think about that. No.
Did you Google divorce lawyers while she was doing this?
No, I listened to it and I was just sort of like, yeah. I could probably pick about 7 Arnie films that do the exact same thing. The other thing that is a little bit weird and problematic about the plot is the whole thing about the map.
Yes.
If someone had the map, surely you would just follow the person with the map, wait till they get there, and then blow their heads off.
Right.
Right. But there were so many other scenes, like in the ghost town and all that stuff. And again, it's all just...
But wait. The bad was hired. The bad was hired to go after the map.
Hmm.
What was the motivation of the good in this?
Well,
the good wasn't after the map. The good were after the bounty, dude.
The good was after the bounty. The good was after the bad, wasn't he?
No. Yeah,
you can't put the bad after the good, or the good after the bad.
Good after bad. There's a saying there somewhere.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
The good
is
basically Clint Eastwood in the trilogy, right? He plays that character, and he's a bounty hunter, mate. He's a bounty hunter, because even at the end, with whatever ending you watched, I assume that you got the ending of this story continuing with the good going after
the weird.
Someone who has a greater bounty on their head now. He's going after the weird, isn't he?
Yep.
I think he originally was going after the bad, but he comes across the weird, and the weird had a bounty on his head as a thief. Is that correct?
It's the finger chopper thing, isn't it?
He's the finger chopper. Which has got a much bigger bounty.
He does, but then that's the absurdity of this movie, how these three characters are connected somehow for different reasons. You know, when that's meant to come as a twist whenever we're given the past of the weird, who comes across as a bumbling fool and a friendly character, but he was akin to a serial killer.
Hmm. Yeah.
Right? Is that correct?
Yep.
That is correct.
If you take out of all of the fucking historical foundation of this movie, then that makes little sense. Because there is actually a phrase that he utters in the version that we've seen that must have come out of the other cut, is when he says, yes, that's me before leaving Korea. Do you remember that?
And that was actually in the cut I saw as well. So for some reason, they put that in there without any context.
Oh, well, there you go. But look, these are the niggles, right? And we talked about all of them. But this movie is a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. And some of the camera work in this, I wish there was more of it like that. Mm-hmm. There's one where there's the equivalent of the camera. You get the point of view of recoil of a gun. So there's someone is shooting a gun on the train and it fires off three times and you can see the camera going bang, bang, bang. Did you see that?
Yeah,
as it's falling backwards. Yeah, but it's the point of view is from the barrel almost.
Mm.
It's really, really cool. And then there's this movie felt like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, the roller coaster. it feels like a roller coaster ride, and it's a roller coaster ride that lasts for over 2 hours. So
just to highlight, those guns used in that scene were Walther P38s.
I can't wait to see this best man speech. I really hope somebody films
George,
the best man
there.
Speech.
Jump in there. What is it? Tell me, what are you reading from you?
No, well, just saying about how you say it's like a roller coaster. I personally, for me, I think the set pieces came at the wrong time. I think it should have gone train, desert. And then the shootout you got in the middle should have been the finale, because
I agree.
That bit was the best bit of the film. And then after that, it was like an anti-climax. I think the whole last scene really drags on. Like the whole, they're just two yards away from the bloke. They're firing the guns and no one's hitting him. Like, they're all like stormtroopers, the Japanese army, because I don't train with guns or anything like that. And then that whole bit kind of drags on. But the bit in the middle, the ghost market scene, is the best part of the whole film. And it is.
But, and there's some of the comedy in that is amazing. Does the zigzagging. Should I do it this way or this way? And that's good. I wish the relationship between the two of them, the dynamic, was also like furthered a little bit. Because that's what you get in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. You get this relation. You get some really good bits of dialogue.
I'm like, just going to highlight that entire scene. Where with the zigzagging, the gun used in that is a Lancaster Mach 1, and And this is another bit of disbelief, because that was produced in 1941, not 1930s. You take a model man and put him in control. Watch him become a god. But I mean, it's great. It's a great gun.
For our listeners, Umbar has gotten up, taken his headphones off. He's probably having a silent scream to himself, trying to work out how he's gonna construct a best man speech for Steve with all of this knowledge of guns. All right, anyway. I'm gonna talk about the finale because George has brought it up. What I actually really liked about the finale is that it was that, so everything had a crescendo to it. And I felt like you needed a big crescendo like the ending to get to, let's be honest, the final climax of oil splurting into the air.
Also, but there is, you know, George was talking about set pieces. There is my favorite set piece in this, but when it comes down to the big epic scale of some of the action sequences, because I didn't see it coming and I forgot about it. I wish it was just shot differently so that you could really savor it, because it's also quite short for what it is when he basically flanks everybody, goes past the army with a much faster horse, and then all of a sudden turns the horse around and goes against the flow. He's basically riding his horse through the middle of the platoon, and they can't shoot him, because if they shoot, they try to shoot him, they'll shoot each other. Shooting a rifle, by the way, not a gun, a rifle, which means that you've got both hands on the rifle. So you have zero control of what's going on here. So from a, you know, I didn't suspend disbelief. I just thought, oh, I want more of that. You know, that's when I turned around to Steve and I went, look what he's doing, man. Look what he's doing. Don't worry about the guns. Don't worry about the fucking guns, Steve. Stop thinking about the guns, man. Watch the action. Watch the equestrian action.
The equestrian action. He was riding a blue blazer. I don't know about horses. No. So what?
I don't know about horses. But I can tell you about his gun.
Jesus Christ, man. I want to tell everyone about your horse trading days in Abu Dhabi in the late 80s, Ricky. What the fuck?
What?
George is looking at his notes, man. In the moment, buddy. Tell us what's going on. What's up?
Oh, you're going to let George go? Go.
Yes, of course.
I think that's just more just a nervous kind of.
Well, but look what at my on notes, that pad, man. What did you write down? Tell us about your.
Well, to be fair,
give us three factoids.
Not really factoids about the film, but I mean, I was looking at the sort of the blend of East and West films, and sort of when a lot of people think that the old cowboy films borrowed from the old samurai films, but this all came about because of Akira Kurosawa, who made Seven Samurai, and then they made Magnificent Seven, and everyone said, oh, they've just borrowed that from Kurosawa. But Kurosawa grew up watching John Ford westerns. And when Seven Samurai came out, a lot of the Japanese critics said, this feels like a Western. And I've made a big list of Western, Eastern films since then. And it's, you know,
give us some names. What did you write down there?
Well, obviously, you've got the, Yojimbo, which was a really big sort of Japanese film. And then that got basically stolen by Sergio Leone, who kind of apologized. He made Fistful of Dollars. Yeah. He settled out of court and he admitted it was an homage, but a very
everyone's paying homages blatant. To everybody. I get it.
Yeah. Yes.
But there's one thing I took pleasure in stealing your little factoid earlier. I stole two from you, then three from you, because I mentioned Jujima, so I wasn't paying attention to your reaction there. But this stays in the show. I take great pleasure in stealing your factoids, people.
I'm going to. Not attack you, Umbar.
Do it.
But I'm going to try and discuss with you. It's not a massive thing that you've got against homage films, but you've brought up Tarantino in the past and other directors who homage, and they feel like they're stealing, but I personally don't think they're stealing. Because, like with this film, when you pay a homage, if it if it works, if it works for the story. So if the story is different. If it works for the story. Yeah. So, for example, a good example of that.
Dude,
are
you taking a segue into Nosferatu? Because I would fucking walk.
No. That's for when we get a special guest that I know will agree with me. Anyway. So, no, I'm talking about, like, if we look at something like The Hateful Eight by...
I love that movie, Tarantino. Dude. Yeah, so what are you talking about? I'm saying that
previously you've talked about homage as if it was stealing, but when it serviced the story, like, yeah, I feel like in this film, that's fine. Every homage
services the story, fine. Yeah. It's built around it. Like, you even said the title, like, why is it called? They're on the fucking poster, and it is like a trinity. You know, without these three characters and that triangle narratively that you can draw between them, you have no story. Mm. That's why they probably felt comfortable in taking all of the exposition required for this movie to make more sense about the conflict. There was a moment as well, dude, in which... Steve didn't just play this with guns while we were watching it.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a uniform. There was a uniform issue, apparently. Steve, you want to talk to them?
I was just looking at the Japanese uniforms and saying they're more inspired by Chinese uniforms.
Yes, they were.
That's when it irked me to the point in which I turned around and was like, what the fuck do you know about Chinese uniform?
Are we talking about the opening scene?
They were
Manchu soldiers, weren't they, in the opening scene?
So Manchu, because they're actually filmed, it's all set in Manchurian, is it? So
Manchurian.
I
agree with you, Steve, because when I saw them, I thought they were Chinese uniform. And then I looked into how this movie got made. A lot of this movie was filmed in China. That's probably they only had access to local military uniforms, and they were like, whatever, it's just the Western, so whatever.
Yeah.
Look, again, I think the movie, like we were saying, to reconnect to what we were saying, the entire movie is set around them as characters. The setting is not, and it's a shame. It's a shame because you could have, you know, there's world building in this, and it's kind of just like the eagle that soars at the beginning of the movie. It seems like a massive... Why are you laughing?
It's always like a pterodactyl.
Like the wings of a pterodactyl.
Oh, the callbacks to other episodes.
That film is never going to leave my psyche. Thanks, Umba.
That's fucking funny, man.
Hi, I tell you.
That's a lie. Look, it's George. George is looking at his notes. I can fucking see him, man. He's like hunting. How am I gonna bring some factoid here that will elevate this conversation? Because I prepared for this.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I wrote some notes.
Who's made that mistake, man? You made that mistake.
Should have brought snow chains.
I can tell you.
Snow chains.
You thought you were gonna bring some value into something that is
I know. Yeah. I kinda know the level now though, so I can kind of relax and
Just like the ego soaring at the beginning, like it seems to me that we given like a very not enough time, was time, dude, because it's not a short movie. As it is, this is an action piece. All right? It's a Western action film. But it's a shame because they could have, even the comedic bits of this movie would have hit harder if it seems to me that every time there's like a dramatic sequence, we're there for like 5 seconds and then they move on from it. And there's room, right? There was room for the relationship with the brother. So everything, even the violence, when you go from soft to, I was going to say from soft to hard, but it's when you go from like tenderness, for example, and in Asian cinema in general, the people that have understood that became giants of the medium. We mentioned Hanabi before. It's a movie that rewards you for being patient. there are sequences where it almost like there's a sense of sterility, and there's like the focus is soft, the music is, there's an absence of sound, and all of a sudden you get really full on ultra violence, and it hits harder because of that contrast. So here it seems to me that even the violence is cartoonish. We don't need to have that violence being cartoonish. Just do it. Cause cartoonish, but gory. But there's no... Did you give a shit? I didn't really give a shit. Even when somebody dies in this, even like when there's like extreme violence versus one of the characters, it's meant to give motivation to one of the... For example, when the weird... When he's, is it his brother? Is that meant to be his brother? Because he lives with their... Or a cousin. I think it's his cousin.
His cousin, yeah.
Well, there you go. When he died, you don't feel shit. I didn't feel anything, you know, like it's, I assume that he's dead after that, by the way.
Oh yeah, but in one of the multiple endings, there's six endings to this film. He isn't dead. He's alive.
So they're playing cards, aren't they? And he turns up.
Yeah, you're right.
No, he's looking. That's another ending. There's one ending where he's like lying on the bed, covered in bandages, and money gets thrown through the window. So you assume the weird's the only one surviving, and money gets thrown in through the window, and he gets hit by it, and it's all comedy effects.
This film's have you ever seen Clue with Tim Curry?
Yeah.
Where they just show all the endings at the end. I mean, it's... And I think Wayne's World sort of riffed on that as well.
They did indeed.
But I think we're also forgetting that Korean cinema is very much like Bollywood cinema. A lot of the films are made for the maximum amount of audiences. A good example of this is Villainess, which I saw in 2017 at Fright Fest. And, you know, it's at Fright Fest, so you assume it's going to be ultraviolet and super gory and all of that stuff. And the previous year they had Train to Busan, which was...
fucking great.
Good film.
Both of those films have the same thing, which is all of a sudden they have like a 10-minute, 15-minute downtime where they have put in some family drama.
Mm.
And Villainess is a big, like, it's as close to Bollywood.
Effectively, though. Because in Train to Busan,
Get me wrong. Do not get me wrong. I love Villainess. I love it to bits. I also love Train to Busan.
I don't think I've seen it. George, have you seen it?
I tried to get you onto it before. It has three of the greatest set pieces in film history.
Did you
say
you tried to get me onto it and I have failed you?
You did fail me, yeah. I do. It basically has like three of the best set pieces ever filmed.
Yeah.
But then it has like an episode of Hollyoaks in between each one where it's very melodramatic, you know. But
like, for our American listeners, could you illustrate what Hollyoaks is about?
It's like Friends, but even more shit.
Oh my God! Okay,
it's like Beverly Hills 90210.
Yeah, pretty much, or Melrose Place, like Melrose.
Oh yeah. Oh my God.
But Villainess has these really stark themes going on about like control over children, turning them into assassins, really violent scenes. But there's this 15 to 20 minute segment in the middle where it's like she's now got a family and she's having a little bit of family time and she's loving this new guy who lives down the, you know, it's that Bollywood thing of like these films are made for a maximum audience. So whoever you are, you come to it and you're like, don't worry, Nan. Don't worry about all the violent scenes because here we go. Look, there's some family drama. You love family drama. Yeah, that's what it is.
Is it Hallmark? Yeah. Like a Hallmark moment.
Yeah, there would be these Hallmark sections throughout. And I feel like The Good, The Bad, The Weird is a brilliant example of they're trying to expand as far as possible so they can get as many markets in as possible.
It's a shame. It's a shame because it pulls this movie away from greatness territory, in my opinion. You know, that's a... Now this conversation has made it more than just a little niggle. I had, come on, guys, I peaked this movie. I peaked this movie, and I kept saying to Steve, oh, man, this is an epic. You're going to fucking love it. And I told you, when we rewatched it, it was still enjoyable, but...
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, but that epic quality that I wanted to... because I said it to you. It's like Indiana Jones meets the, you know, the, like a spaghetti western, and yeah, that's and somehow accurate description, but the scope felt smaller, dude. And
it's a good film. What I'd find with that is that someone would listen into this and they'd be like, oh, it's not a great film. It's just a good film. But then off the back of that, this person might then watch the other director's work and these other Korean films that we're mentioning. And that's kind of like, you know, that's what this podcast is about for me. Like and the same thing with like the little actors that you bring up, you always find the little guys and you back for them. So it's not about, you know, putting on, this is the best film ever. You know, this is a interesting film. It's what, you know, one that I wouldn't probably recommend, like, you know, die on that hill, but it's a good film, man. It's you know,
it is more certainly entertaining.
Yeah,
you know who else wouldn't recommend this film?
Oh my god, we're back one of the show. All right,
Jake Flagrant in February 15th 2015 said, massively overrated. What the hell are people smoking? And I'm going to just focus on this 2 out of 10 review. So that was a 1 out of 10 review. 2 out of 10. My notes. I can't really say this movie is bad, but I didn't want to finish it. Watched about half. I didn't see the good, the bad, and the ugly. So the tribute related stuff did nothing for me, and comedy never really translates well when watching foreign cinema. So I will say looked well made and had a feel a little legitimate Hollywood movie. One viewing, well, not even one viewing, you didn't even make it halfway, mate. Feast Mode, July 21st, 2019. Thank you so much for your 2-star review.
What the fuck's this guy's username?
Feast Mode.
His name is Feast Mode. Feast Mode.
You listen to me. Listen to me good now. I will find you and I will kill you. Why is fucking Schwarzenegger doing the monologue from Liam Neeson from
Taken?
Listen to me. Listen to me now. I have a very particular set of skills. I will find you. And I was killing you.
Your needle was moving negative towards this film. Surely those negative reviews are making you go, no, you know what? Back up.
No, look, come on. Again, I said it. I peaked it. All right. It's just that sometimes, I mean, the greatest aspiration that I have when I watch the movie again that I haven't seen in a while is for it to be somehow finer, like a wine. Okay. And no many movies do that. You know, we mentioned fucking Nosferatu earlier. Okay.
You mentioned Nosferatu earlier.
Yes. Yes. To give you an example, like everybody knows, you guys know that The 79 by Herzog is one of my favorite movies ever. And it's because it's one of those few movies that actually holds that quality, 100% of it. It's the greatest accolade that I could give to a movie. That movie gets better for me every 5 years. Every 5 years I watch it, and my life experience accruing would mean that I get something else. But I've done this several times with this movie. That do the math. Yes, I am old. If it's every 5 years and I've seen it several times. But it's a rare quality. Because this is not a case of, oh, I feel down, I'll watch The Goonies, or I'll watch Little Weapon, or I watch. So something is good within their right. Yeah. But I am getting it's like getting real, like really good fast food from a fast food chain that you prefer. You know exactly what you're going to get, right? No.
Yeah.
This is above that. So it's not even comfort. It's not even nostalgia. It's magic because you have a movie that is giving you more every time. And I'm not talking about just, oh, I didn't get that viewing. I got this on this viewing. No. Like another layer. And that's why someone like Herzog is one of the greats because of that. I'm not saying, I'm not comparing this to an instant classic, but I did use word like epic and, you know, like spectacular when I described it to, I didn't say spectacular. I don't want to be one of those people. I don't think I say spectacular in a sentence often enough. When was the last time you said spectacular about anything? There you go.
I say it quite often.
You do?
I'm just going to say,
When was the last time you said spectacular, Ricky?
When I was talking about school spectacular, which happens every year in this country.
There's something called school spectacular. Holy shit, mate. Steve, what were you saying? Which gun are we talking about?
So what I was just going to include was the fact that this is in the list of 1001 films before you die.
This is 1001 in the ranking?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know where it is in the ranking, but it is in the list.
You must have read this online now. Can you tell me, if there's a ranking, can you tell me what's at 1001?
I don't think they're ranked.
I think it's just a list, isn't it? Yeah. They just put it in alphabetical order. Can I
tell you that if they called it that, there was a ranking, and then someone said, don't rank them. Don't rank them. But I would be curious to know why it's 1001.
Oh, no, they rank them by year. So
so we have a movie from 1001 years ago? Is that what the fuck you're saying?
No, as in like... Okay, Freaks and Me and My Girl are next to each other because 1932, and then that sort of thing.
Yeah, sorry, I realized I'd said something extremely stupid.
I think 1001 is Mystery Men, isn't it?
Let's talk about Marilyn Bands. Marilyn Vance to the boardroom for this movie. She's great.
Saying that the aesthetic of this film, I think, borrows more from the Wild Wild West film, the Will Smith, than it does from Sergio. Yeah. And also, can I just say I said about the good being like the K-pop star. Is it just me, or is the bad on his way to a some sort of like goth revival concert?
It's more emo.
Yeah, My Chemical Romance. He's on his way to a My Chemical Romance concert, and then all of a sudden he's got to go and rob a train. So he was a bit cranky. Someone cut his finger off. So he, you know.
So ratings.
Okay, George, let's start.
Right. I think last week's episode, Amber was talking about fat being on it on Rounders. And I think that's pretty much what holds this film back from being really great. It could have been 90 minutes, cut down the time between the set pieces. Like I said, in my opinion, I should have flipped it around and had the market scene last to finish on a high. Like I said, sometimes that fat renders into the meat, makes it taste better. Sometimes it needs to be trimmed off, you know. Oh, and I think it just keeps it from being a 7. For me, so it's a 6.99 for me. Fingers so
the
being
fat,
chopped
the fat
off.
Didn't fully render.
No, I had to cut a bit of gristle off, and the waiter took it away in a hanky. In fact, I took it home for the dog. But yeah, it was like I said, good film.
What was your score?
6.99 chopped off fingers.
Ah, see, he knows the deal. Well done, George. A round of applause for our guest. Well done.
It's like I've been listening,
Steve.
I'm going to go for 6.5 again. It's a good movie. It's above average. I think some of the set pieces are absolutely amazing. The train sequence in itself is fantastic. I loved that entire sequence. Straight off the bat, it's fast, it's furious, it's comedical, and I'm going to rate it 6.5 Marlin model 1894s, which is a gun which was basically used by Park Do-won's primary weapon. I'm just going to mention one other thing, a little factoid.
Another gun?
No. What is one it? Of the main characters broke his arm during filming.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
With a gun?
Yeah.
One of the stunt riggers died as well.
Yeah.
He was the guy that did the fight scene in Old Boy in the corridor. Yeah. And he died.
He died during this movie.
Yeah, he died during production.
Oh my God.
I should have probably written his name down to give him a shout out.
You see? You didn't think you're not
you can add that in post, can't you?
I'll just say it out loud now. It's Jung Hoon Ji. And his car struck a lumber truck and they kind of covered it up so that the production could go ahead without too many people being like, oh my God, somebody died on production. So it kind of got hushed up, put under the carpet until the film was released.
Alec Baldwin wished he'd tried that one.
And yet he still appears on Saturday Night Live a lot.
Yeah.
Isn't there, he's got, a whole kind of, like a sort of Hogan knows best sort of show now, hasn't he? With the Baldwins, like.
You would think that in real life he was probably hoping to shoot blanks, but he's got fucking 10,000 kids, right? So,
okay, so look, I love this director. This film is not Tale of Two Sisters. This film is not The Quiet Family. But we also have to give props to the editor of this film. There are certain set pieces in this film where it goes from side to above, back to side, and you don't lose where you are in the fight, or you don't lose where you are in the action. And that takes some skill. And it's the same editor for I Saw the Devil. Their name is Nam Na Jung. If it wasn't for that, if it wasn't for how all of these set pieces are edited together, this film would lose a lot more points in my mind. I would put some of his earlier films, or some of the films that I love of his, Tale of Two Sisters, up to about an 8.5. It's not that. It's not that.
But I Saw the Devil, which you haven't mentioned. I Saw the Devil,
once, yeah. Eight, yeah. Easy.
Are you going to watch Banchigami now, the one that I recommended?
Yeah, yeah, I will. And I realize that it's also the film that actually started off the love of wrestling for Suda 51, mm-hmm. and why he made that video game early on that is just a wrestling like nice. Story game. Anyway, I am going to give this one, I would watch it again. So I'd say 7.6. I've forgotten what I was going to say now. 7.6 what? 7.6 drug dens full of whores.
Can we talk about how unnecessary that scene is when he kicks the knives up the people's asses?
Fantastic.
Fucker, he's taken that away from me. That was going to be my rating, actually, and now it's not going to hit as... Oh, actually, yeah, it does hit pretty hard, doesn't it?
Still my factor, you bastard.
It happens twice in this movie, and when it happens twice, it actually happens twice. Like, whenever they get impaled in the ass, then whatever is used to impale them in the ass is kicked further into their ass. It's just brutal.
But he saves children. It's all good. Yep. He saves
He does
children.
It in front of the fucking kids, doesn't he?
He makes them look away. The I mean, well. To be fair. Look away, kids. This is gross.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Yeah. Well, it's my turn, I guess. I recommended this. I picked this. I still recommend this movie. If you haven't seen it, I recommend you watch it. It's endlessly entertaining. If anything, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but the pacing, the furiousness works against the movie. I just think those set pieces are... It's the returns are diminished as the movie progresses somehow. You know, you would expect... You know, you, Ricky, you were bang on the money earlier. You mentioned the climax of this as being like unwrapped in oil well. It's like, and even then, it doesn't... It's not... It's like a small hose. You know what I mean? We don't get this. If you look at the size and the scope of the pyro in this and the explosions or whatever, just have a fucking big oil well gushing. And don't tell me that there's no CGI for it or you run out of budget. Because again, you have that beautiful eagle soaring high, high above this movie's problems. So this is still something that I could easily, if terrestrial television was still a thing, yeah. The same circumstances that we discussed on the previous episode with Kev. We talked about a time in which you were on your way out. Let's say, you know, you were in your 20s, you were sharing a house, other people are watching the screen as you are going somewhere. So you're leaving the house with purpose. It happened to me more than once that I went, fuck this, I'm just sitting down and watching this instead. You know, if this movie was on, it would be a showstopper, literally. Like I would stop and watch that, you know. If I get that again, like with Die Hard, I dare you to be somewhere and Die Hard's playing in the background and you're not just going to stop and stare for a bit because it's, you know, or Ghostbusters or anything, you know, like this movie had great aspirations. And I think like a cleaner, more cohesive edit, global edit would have helped this movie achieve why it was made. This movie was meant to be an export. And that's why so much emphasis was placed behind selling this movie. I would be interested in this era of director's cuts or whatever. Maybe in the future we get an actual director's cut of this movie. and it would be phenomenal. But until that time comes, if you come across this, or if you listen to this podcast and you have not seen The Good, The Bad, and The Weird, I highly recommend that you do so. My rating for this is, you know, it went from being like, at some point in my life, this must have been a 9. It's now a 7. It's a hard 7, which is pretty high, yeah? And it's a 7 Steve's, irking Steve's, talking about guns. It's 7 Thanks. Irking Steve's talking about guns. You made it into the rating section of my fucking deliberation, Steve. Well done. I still enjoy watching the movie with you, though.
Good.
And on that note, this was Umba.
This is Ricky.
This is Steve.
This is George.
Bye!
Snow tires, eagles, pterodactyls.